We have caught up with composer and conductor John Adams. Welcome to Philadelphia again.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be back here. It's been almost 20 years since I was last with the orchestra.
I read in your memoir that one of your first experiences with classical music was the 1812 overture conducted by Stokowski. And maybe it wasn't with the Philadelphia Orchestra, but was there a Philadelphia connection there?
It was indeed with the Philadelphia Orchestra. It was an LP. My dad probably bought it sometime around 1954 or so when I was 7 years old. And actually, the very first experience I had as a kid hearing live classical music was I lived in very rural New Hampshire, and the Philadelphia Woodwind Quintet came to Dartmouth College, which was not far from where we lived, and that was the days when they had Mason Jones and William Kincaid and Anthony Gigliotti, Saul Schoenberg. It was an amazing experience. And that was probably one of the prime formative events in my life, was to hear them playing so beautifully.
Do you remember what they were playing?
I do, actually, because I was a clarinet player. They were playing a Nielsen quintet and summer music by Samuel Barber and something classical, which I don't remember.
And how old were you?
I'm going to guess I was probably 7 or 8.
Wow. So you grew up playing the clarinet and then began composing when you were about 10, I hear.
I did, which, you know, some people think is a strange thing. But actually, I think all children are very creative when they're young. It's just that adults don't catch it. They don't see how when a child wants to paint or write poetry or compose music, that is something that should be encouraged. And fortunately, my parents understood that about me and provided me with composition lessons. And the same thing happened with our kids. My wife and I saw this happening with both of them, and now our son is a composer. You know, he's composer in residence with the Chicago Symphony recently, and will be with the Concertgebouw next year. And our daughter is a painter, wonderful painter.
Wow. Well, it's great to have music and art a part of your life. This program is a great program. What was your thinking in juxtaposing these two works by Ravel and Stravinsky with your own work?
Well, it's a little dangerous for me to program pieces that are so brilliant and so full of incredibly imaginative use of the orchestra, and then follow it with my own music, because I'm just asking to be compared. But this particular piece of mine, Scheherazade Point 2, is, I think, a very colorful and, I wouldn't say exotic piece, but it does specialize in very unusual sonorities. It has a Hungarian cimbalom, which is sort of like a hammered dulcimer.
I noticed that. That's a stringed instrument.
It is a stringed instrument, but it's played with sticks, sort of like little hammers, and it has a wonderfully kind of sour sound when it's in the context of the symphony orchestra. So I chose two pieces: the Ravel Alborado del Grazioso, which of course is one of his Spanish-inspired pieces. And then this, one of my desert island pieces, the Chant au Rossignol, the Song of the Nightingale by Stravinsky, which is a symphonic poem drawn from an early opera of his based on the Hans Christian Andersen folktale.
So it's interesting that Ravel was French and was fascinated by Spanish, and Stravinsky was Russian and wrote a work about China. And this next work that we'll hear from you was inspired, I understand, after you saw an exhibition in Paris about 1001 Nights.
That's right. And, of course, I'm also the composer of Nixon in China, but that's something else. Yes, I think, you know, we're in a really kind of complex period right now because, you know, there's a new sensibility about what's, for lack of a better term, is called cultural appropriation. You know, people are sensitive about mining techniques and traditions of other cultures. I actually think that it's just been that, what I call kind of a creative misunderstanding on the part of composers to know just third hand what Chinese music, or third hand what African music, and imagine it, reimagine it, and in the hands of geniuses like Ravel and Stravinsky, it creates something absolutely wonderful. And I wrote my piece in somewhat the same vein. I this piece is called Scheherazade Point Two, and of course everybody thinks of the big Rimsky-Korsakov tone poem, and I don't have any interest at all in comparing my piece to it. My piece is completely different, but it was inspired by thinking about this tale of Scheherazade from the contemporary feminist point of view, that this is actually a terrible story. I'll say a few remarks from the stage just before we talk about it, and you can hear what my reaction was when I first read the actual story.
Well, it is pretty horrifying, and I understand you also wanted to write a big dramatic work for Lila Josefowitz.
I've known Lila Josefowitz for almost, I think, 20 years now, and she approached me when she was 20 years old and said she wanted to play my violin concerto, and I'd already heard of her. You know, she was one of these dazzling young stars and was playing, you know, Tchaikovsky and Mendelssohn and Brooke and all the standards. But she just decided she wanted to make a life devoting her incredible talents and energy to performing music of our time. And she's played this particular concerto. This is a big piece. It's a symphony and a concerto, and it's 50 minutes long. And we think this is about the 60th performance that she's done. And I can tell you that not many composers have that honor during their life. I don't even think Tchaikovsky got it.
So the violin is playing Scheherazade. What role is the orchestra?
Well, I don't think of it that specifically, but I do think that this is an unusual work in the sense that it's the only concerto I know where the violinist is actually a character. And I wrote it for Lila because Lila has that kind of incredible power. You know, she's this lovely person and very open soul, such a generous heart. But there's just this fantastic sense of independence about Lila. And this piece has been around now for about 7 or 8 years, and no one's dared go near it because Lila, at least for the time being, she just plays it so fantastically well. She does the whole thing from memory. I think other violinists are just intimidated by it.
Wow. So what's it like for you to conduct your own work? And is your experience with each orchestra different? Does the work evolve?
Yes. Some of my pieces radically evolve. I mean, I have to take them back and change them. I have a piece called Absolute Jest, one of my favorite pieces for string quartet and orchestra, which is based on fragments from late Beethoven scherzos. And I threw away the first 400 bars and completely rewrote it. Here, you know, basically I haven't had to make a lot of changes. Most of the changes are, you know, minuscule things, dynamic, orchestration adjustments. And as far as conducting, I enjoy conducting my own pieces. I mean, I have some really great conductors who do my work, people like Simon Rattle and Esa-Pekka Salonen and Gustavo Dudamel and many others. It's an opportunity for me to sort of set a standard and introduce my pieces to the performers around the world.
Well, you do so much. You conduct, you compose, you write with words, you have a memoir, you write articles. This work and many of your works demonstrate how music can really speak to our time and relate to current events. What is it about a situation that prompts you to write music?
I think a lot of artists, they want to make art, and it's just like breathing. We just do it every day. It's an automatic thing. And I do respond to the world around me. Not everything I write has some social or historical basis to it. But, you know, I've written operas, Nixon in China, which is, you know, about politics, and The Death of Klinghoffer, which is about terrorism, and the Dr. Atomic, which is about the atomic bomb. These are, you know, very, very major themes in our contemporary life. and they have inspired me to create music. And sometimes I don't have anything particular, I have to say. I just have written abstract pieces that give me great joy. So it just depends on what the piece is, that whether I've got some sort of story behind it or whether it's just pure music.
What role do you think music plays in our life today?
I don't think anyone on the planet can live without music. I mean, if you think about it, everyone has music, whether it's hip-hop or, rap, or whether it's Mahler or Stockhausen. everyone has a need for music. And I think it's simply because music is fundamentally an act of communicating feeling. There are many other things that music can communicate, but there's something particularly about feeling a pulse, which you can certainly feel in my music, and harmony, the relationships of harmony, and words, when they're sung to music, they give us some inexplicable sense of meaning that we just can't get in any other form of communication.
Growing up, you've been exposed to all different kinds of music, from jazz and rock and pop and the different traditions of musical thought. What are your thoughts about the future of this art form?
When I'm asked that question, my answer is that I no more could predict the future than Brahms could have predicted the electric guitar. And the electric guitar transformed music totally. And there's no way of knowing. I do think that symphony orchestras will continue. It's always a challenge to fill the hall, and particularly, for a program like mine where the music isn't super familiar, like Beethoven's Ninth or, Firebird, it draws usually a very committed and intelligent audience. But I think that there'll always be a need to listen to real live classical music. And the bottom line is that orchestras, particularly in this country, they just get better and better and better and better. And this Philadelphia Orchestra of 2019 is just something else. They are an amazing ensemble.
Well, it's so exciting to talk with you, and it's exciting to hear your music, and I think it bodes well for the future of classical music.
Thank you. I'm loving being here in Philadelphia.
Thank you so much, John Adams.